two lonely figures came down from the high mountains. They were dressed in travel-worn furs and leather helmets with ear flaps strapped beneath their chins against the cold. Their beards were untrimmed and their faces weather-beaten. They carried all their meager possessions upon their backs. It had taken a hard and daunting journey to reach this spot. Although he led, Meran had no inkling where they were. Neither was he sure why they had come so far. Only the old man who followed close behind him knew that, and he had not yet chosen to enlighten Meran. Since leaving Egypt, they had crossed seas and lakes and many mighty rivers. They had traversed vast plains and forests. They had encountered strange and dangerous animals and even stranger and more dangerous men. Then they had entered the mountains, a prodigious chaos of snowy peaks and gaping gorges where the thin air was hard to breathe. Their horses had died in the cold, and Meran had lost the tip of one finger, burned black and rotting by the crackling frosts. Fortunately, it was not the finger of his sword hand, nor one of those that released the arrow from his great bow. Meran stopped on the brink of the last sheer cliff. The old man came up beside him. His fur coat was made from the skin of a snow tiger that Meran had slain with a single arrow as it sprang upon him. Standing shoulder to shoulder, they looked down on a foreign land of rivers and dense green jungles.
5 years, Meran said. 5 years we have been upon the road. Is this the end of the journey, Magus?
Ah, good, Meran. Surely it has not been that long, Taita asked, and his eyes sparkled teasingly under frost-white brows.
In reply, Meran unslung his sword scabbard from his back and displayed the lines of notches scratched in the leather.
I have recorded every day, should you wish to count them, he assured him.
He had followed Taita and protected him for more than half his own lifetime, but he was still never entirely certain whether the other was serious or merely jesting with him.
But you have not answered my question, Reverend Magus. Have we reached the end of our journey?
Nay, we have not, Taita shook his head. But take comfort, for at least we have made a good beginning.
Now he took the lead and set out along a narrow ledge that angled down across the face of the cliff. Meran gazed after him for a few moments, then his bluff, handsome features creased into a grin of rueful resignation.
Will the old devil never stop? He asked the mountains,
slung his scabbard on his back, and followed him. At the bottom of the cliff they came round a buttress of white quartz rock, and a voice piped out of the sky,
Welcome, travellers! I've waited a long time for your coming!
They stopped in surprise, and looked up at the ledge above them. On it sat a childlike figure, a boy who seemed no older than 11 years. It was odd that they had not noticed him before, for he was in full view. The high, bright sunlight picked him out and reflected off the shining quartz that surrounded him with a radiant nimbus which pained the eyes.
I have been sent to guide you to the Temple of Saraswati, the goddess of wisdom and regeneration,
said the child, and his voice was mellifluous.
You speak the Egyptian language, Meran blurted in astonishment.
The boy turned the fatuous remark with a smile. He had the brown face of a mischievous monkey, but his smile was so winsome that Meran could not help but return it.
My name is Ganga. I am the messenger. Come, there is still some way to go.
He stood, and his thick braid of black hair dangled over one bare shoulder. Even in the cold he wore only a loincloth. His smooth bare torso was a dark chestnut colour, yet he carried on his back a hump like that of a camel, grotesque and shocking. He saw their expressions and smiled again.
You will grow accustomed to it as I have, he said.
He jumped down from the shelf and reached up to take Taita's hand.
This way,